When I first heard about two new books for people coming out of heterosexual marriages, I thought, good, someone needs to talk about how this is done ethically.
In 1930, Variety magazine reported, "Only he-men are wanted by the studio for Chorus Boys. If too pretty, dainty, or over-marcelled, he is aired off the casting list."
I knew that I had good intentions, but also that I had so much to learn about the LGBTQ community and the world in general.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A London married couple appeals for recognition in Northern Ireland. Two books help guide lesbians and gays out of heterosexual marriages. And a young straight ally offers insights for those who want to join him. All that and more this week because you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 17th, 2018. Oral arguments concluded this week in a marriage equality case in the Court of Appeal of the only major area of the United Kingdom without it, Northern Ireland. Plaintiffs in the case, known as Petition X, are an anonymous Northern Ireland gay couple who legally married in London in 2014. Northern Ireland only recognizes the marriages of same-gender couples conducted in other parts of the UK as civil partnerships. The couple filed their appeal after the Belfast High Court ruled against them, deciding that only lawmakers could enact equality. The couple contends that downgrading their marriage to a civil partnership is a human rights violation that unlawfully discriminates against their rights to privacy, family life, and religious freedom. Even though a majority of Northern Ireland Assembly members voted for a marriage equality bill in 2015, the ultra-conservative Democratic Unionist Party, or DUP, has used what are called petitions of concern to overrule any effort to legislate on the issue. The current Assembly is not functioning because the DUP and the equality-supporting Sinn Féin Party have been unable to reach a power-sharing agreement. Opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples has been one of the major stumbling blocks.
The Northern Ireland Assembly and the British government are each named as defendants. Lawyers for the British government argued that there was never intended to be a one-size-fits-all approach to the legal recognition of same-gender couples across the UK, and that the gay couple's ability to wed in England, but not Northern Ireland, was a matter of policy rather than a legal matter. Lawyers for the gay couple stressed that their case differed from another case working its way through the courts that has been filed by same-gender couples seeking the right to marry in Northern Ireland. But it is similar to a lawsuit to be heard in May in the British Overseas Territory of Bermuda. That lawsuit involves the downgrading of existing marriage equality in the Caribbean nation to domestic partnerships. The three-judge appeals court panel hearing the Petition X case, led by Lord Chief Justice Sir Declan Morgan, pledged this week to deliver a verdict as soon as possible.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence came under fire this week when he broke with long-standing tradition and banned the press from covering the Vice President's St. Patrick's Day breakfast with an Irish leader. This year, it was openly gay Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar. Pence allowed the press to cover his official greeting as Varadkar arrived at the vice presidential residence in the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., but he ignored questions shouted by reporters about why the meeting itself was being held behind closed doors. The fact that Pence is well known for his anti-queer views and that Varadkar is openly gay and an ardent equality supporter suggests that Trump administration officials didn't want any conversation embarrassing to the vice president to be recorded and reported. Varadkar told the Irish press last week that he intended to raise the issue of LGBT rights with the vice president. He said afterwards that the private meeting probably allowed the two politicians to have a frank conversation.
Elsewhere, a transgender boy in the U.S. state of Maryland has won the right to use the school bathroom and locker room of his choice. U.S. District Court Judge George L. Russell III ruled this week that the claims of the student, known in the suit as M.A.B., come down to a boy asking his school to treat him just like any other boy. Russell found that Title IX and the Equal Protection Clause provide MAB grounds to do so. Title IX of the Education Amendments of 1972 bans the denial of benefits or any form of discrimination based on sex in all federally funded education programs. Russell stopped short of issuing an injunction against the school district and ordered their officials and attorneys for MAB, who's represented by the Maryland LGBT Advocacy Group, Free State Justice, and the ACLU, to resolve the matter before the school year begins again in September. Russell's ruling mirrors several other court decisions that Title IX does protect trans students. Donald Trump's Education Department reversed an Obama-era policy that supported those protections and now refuses to consider any gender identity-based discrimination complaints from transgender students.
Brazil's Supreme Court ruled last week that the government can no longer require transgender people who want to change the gender designation on their identification documents to first undergo psychiatric evaluation and gender reassignment surgery or get a court's approval. According to Human Rights Watch, Argentina was the first country on the planet to allow the ID change without surgery or court approval in 2012. Colombia, Denmark, Ireland, Norway, Malta, and now Brazil have since followed suit. Recognizing people's self-identified gender is not asking governments to acknowledge any new or special rights, a Human Rights Watch statement said. Instead, it is a commitment to the core idea that governments will not decide for people who they are. Despite its live-and-let-live reputation, Brazil has the highest number of murders of transgender people in the world. The Brazilian charity ANTRA, which tracks those killings, said that 179 cross-dressers and trans people were killed in 2017 alone, which amounts to one murder every 48 hours. And those are just the cases that were reported. The group's founder, Kyla Simpson, told the Washington Blade newspaper that, "We live in a country where it is allowed to kill, where religious fanaticism sharpens its knife daily to decimate our community, and where the prejudice faced by transgender people starts inside their homes."
Gays and lesbians are also frequent targets of violence in Brazil. Rio de Janeiro City Council member Mariela Franco, an out black lesbian human rights activist who campaigned against police abuse in the city's poorest neighborhoods, was gunned down this week. 3 days of mourning have been declared. Even though the area's residents have become numb to almost daily violence, the drive-by assassination prompted a wave of anger and social media-fueled street demonstrations. A crowd of several thousand people gathered outside her city council offices on March 15th, brandishing placards charging that Franco was executed by an out-of-control military police force recently brought in by the federal government to curb drug-related violence. Critics charge that the military police force has done little to dent the drug trade, but has harassed and abused civilians and needs to be disbanded. Investigators agree that the 38-year-old activist was the victim of a targeted assassination, but officials won't say by whom. Her driver, Anderson Pedro Gomez, was also killed, and an aide was injured when, according to police reports, two men in a car drew alongside her vehicle, shot into the car 9 times, and sped away. One of Franco's last posts on Twitter highlighted the shooting death of a young man, describing it as another homicide that could be credited to the police. She'd previously called a military police unit the Battalion of Death because of the number of civilians shot by its officers. Well-known out investigative journalist Glenn Greenwald mourned Franco's death, noting on Twitter that she had a 19-year-old daughter, an amazing girlfriend and family. The political consequences will be strong. A number of global rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, have also condemned the killing. Police spokesman said that investigators were not yet sure about a motive, but promised a thorough postmortem. Cynics are not holding their collective breath.
In other news, the longtime face of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, Kate Kendall, announced this week that she's stepping down after 22 years as its executive director. Kendall grew up Mormon in Ogden, Utah, migrated to San Francisco, and began her career with the center as legal director in 1994. She was named executive director 2 years later. Kendall announced her departure on the group's blog. I feel enormous gratitude to have been a part of the NCLR legacy, part of the history of the fight, still ongoing, for full lived justice for all LGBTQ people, she wrote. The leaders of virtually every other queer rights group in the country praised Kendall for her dedication and leadership. I am forever beholden to you all for making me better. The honor truly has been all mine, she wrote, signing off with mad love and respect.
And finally,
let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore.
You may be among the millions of viewers of a viral video showing a drag queen dressed as Elsa from the Disney hit Frozen during this week's blizzard, single-handedly pushing a stuck police van out of a snowdrift in South Boston. He can then be seen curtsying for the camera and triumphantly sashaying in the snow, singing, "Let It Go." The 37-year-old lawyer in real life, Jason Triplett, said he dressed in the blue dress and blonde braided wig to give his friends at the nearby Gallows Bar a laugh. Enjoying his 15 minutes of fame, Triplett told BuzzFeed that he wouldn't go on the Ellen DeGeneres show unless Adam Rippon was there. When asked during an Entertainment Tonight interview about Triplett's amazing feat, Rippon himself offered a perfect salute.
They say not all heroes wear capes, but sometimes they do.
Cole never bothered me anyway.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending March 17th, 2018. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
I'm scared of being ignorant. There's something frightening about not being aware of the truth.
A young ally goes to school later in the program.
Whether I'm right or whether I'm wrong, whether I find a place in this world or never belong, I've got to be me.
For a special group of people who need to sing that song, two handbooks to help the heterosexually married come out have caught the eye of This Way Out Queer Life and Lit commentator Janet Mason and deepened her compassion for their situation.
When I first heard about two new books for people coming out of heterosexual marriages, I thought, good, someone needs to talk about how this is done ethically. In other words, honesty is the best policy, and this means not living a double life for any reason. I was not disappointed. In fact, both books evoked compassion on my part. As a longtime lesbian feminist with a long-term partner in a world that has seen many advances in LGBT rights, I managed to stay in a bubble where it seems like homophobia rarely touches me. And when it does, I manage to get away. But these two books focus on the rest of the world where rights are under attack. Indeed, where progress is met with a backlash. Sadly, this world does exist. As Darshana Matani writes in Greetings from Jane Land, edited by Candace Walsh and Barbara Strauss Lodge, and published by Cleus Press, as an Indian daughter in Barbados, I was told who I was before I could figure it out for myself. My whole life was a preamble to marriage. Had a budget for groceries, remove greasy stains from marble tables, make chai, entertain and dress accordingly, pay compliments, satisfy my husband, impress the in-laws, and most importantly, listen without having an opinion. So how to get out of an arranged marriage, or for that matter, any heterosexual marriage? The answers lie in the pages of this book, which is organized into short stories focusing on the experiences of each woman. Many other writers are mothers. Some were raised in strict religious traditions. Others come from small towns, and others come from diverse ethnic backgrounds. More than a few were terrified of losing their children and the support of their families. But they did manage to leave heterosexual marriages that were not working for them. In the process, they were able to create lives where they define themselves. Married Man Coming Out, Create Space by David Christel. It is a step-by-step guide for coming out with a goal, as he puts it in the subtitle, to become the man you were born to be. Christel starts off with the sage advice of paying attention to your emotions. As he writes, I know you're a guy, so checking in on your feelings isn't what you do. Do it anyway. Not dealing with your feelings is a cultural myth about men that has been promulgated for eons. Men don't feel, men do. Yet men do have feelings that are fundamental to their being. The author then goes on to make suggestions for telling the female spouse. Her pain is going to be palpable. Whatever you do, don't go stoic on her or let yourself be vulnerable with her. After all, you did marry her and you may have had children with her. Your marriage is based on something and you need to have that come through. This way, she won't feel completely abandoned by you and let feelings of worthlessness overtake her. This book is written with humor interlaced through it and is very comprehensive. Christel includes coming out to children, other family members, old friends, co-workers, and even touches on the gay community. He also mentions support groups for coming out and also groups for dealing with addiction. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and leisure for This Way Out.
I'm Kate Clinton, and while I can joke about the political state of our country, it's no laughing matter what Congress could do to our civil rights. An informed community is a strong community. That's why I'm inviting you to tune in to this station to hear This Way Out.
I realized that I was troubled by what I understood as my complacency with my ignorance. So I felt that I needed to find a way not only to help end ignorance in others, but also within myself.
Declaring yourself an ally is one thing, but that may be just the first step. Wise counsel from a young straight activist is coming up, but first...
And now for something completely different.
After a classic satiric setup, Hollywood's early emphasis on uber-masculinity is remembered in A Rainbow Minute.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack.
Cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the lavatory. On Wednesdays I go shopping and have buttered scones for tea.
He cuts down trees, eats his lunch, he goes to the lavatory. On Wednesdays he goes shopping and has buttered scones for tea.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day. I cut down trees, I skip and jump, I like to press wildflowers. I put on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
He cuts down trees, he skips and jumps, he likes to press wildflowers. He puts on women's clothing and hang around in bars.
Only He-Men in the Chorus. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. In the early 1930s, there was a concerted effort to ban depictions of homosexuality in films. Instigated by Catholic reformers and put into place by the movie industry itself, the details were spelled out in what was called the Production Code. Studio chiefs were forced to weed out the gay actors. In 1930, Variety magazine reported, "Only He-Men are wanted by the studio for chorus boys. Each chorus boy is individually considered. If too pretty, dainty, or over-marcelled, he is aired off the casting list." Matinee idols like William Haynes were pressured to arrange a marriage of convenience. In the end, Haynes' contract with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer was not renewed, since he refused to go along with studio publicity that would have hidden his homosexuality. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John DeBoer.
Extra! Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
Taking a stand as a straight supporter of LGBTQ people doesn't necessarily mean you worked out all of your own misconceptions and prejudices. A straight member of Outcasting Overtime looks inward to examine his fear of being ignorant and his motivations for working with the queer community.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Quinn, a youth participant in Outcasting's main studio in Westchester County, New York. On this edition, Outcaster Max talks about his story about joining Outcasting as a straight ally. Max chooses to focus on the idea of ignorance and how Outcasting has helped him personally learn and teach others about the LGBTQ community.
I used to think that stories that I read in school were stupid. In my freshman year of high school, a time when I didn't have the ability to think for myself, my English class read The Allegory of the Cave. My mind was blown as Plato's story challenged the idea of ignorance, and I began to appreciate more of what I read in class. The Allegory of the Cave is a story of prisoners who are chained down to only face the backside of a cave. They suffer from having a skewed sense of reality, as their understanding of the world comes solely from the shadows they see on the walls. When a prisoner is freed from his position, his changing understandings baffle him. It's a bit more complicated than that, but that's the gist of it. This was the first story that I read in school that had an impact on me. Ever since reading it, I've always had a fear of being one of those prisoners. Not that I'm scared of being chained down in a cave, but I'm scared of being ignorant. There's something frightening about not being aware of the truth. Now, you may be wondering how all this talk of Plato and ignorance plays into my role at Outcasting. Well, in part, Outcasting has become a way for me to take off my chains and learn about the world. At least the worlds of the LGBTQ community, activism, and leadership. I grew up in a home and a town that are pretty accepting of all kinds of people, and when I was very young, it seemed to me that society was perfect. In my elementary school days, my understanding of the world was that discrimination and bigotry were things of the past. To a third grader, the civil rights movement of the 1960s felt like centuries ago. I was inspired by photographs of the Little Rock Nine and wished I could have been there to join in the fight for justice. Obviously, race isn't the only reason why people are discriminated against, as the LGBTQ community still struggles for equality. Growing up as a teenage boy, I was constantly surrounded by the F word. While the four-letter F word doesn't bother me, the six-letter one that is derogatory towards gay people did. For some reason, for guys, using that word is just a thing to do, to be cool. And I understand that my friends don't mean to be hateful, but that's the effect they're having. That always bothered me how they could be hurting someone unintentionally. I never wanted to do that, and my fear of ignorance was always playing in the back of my head. One night, I think when I was a freshman, my mom and I were having a conversation about family friends who happened to be a happily married gay couple. My mom casually shared that she wondered who was the husband and who was the wife in the relationship. I knew she didn't have the slightest bit of hatred in her, but she just didn't know that the question she had asked was a bit offensive. I was slightly taken aback, just as I had been with my friends. After explaining to her that their marriage wasn't defined by traditional rules, I was forced to pose a question to myself. If my parents, who are accepting and loving individuals, make unintentionally hurtful comments, do I? Did I make microaggressions? Was I ignorant? I quickly came to the conclusion that surely I was. I knew that I had good intentions, but also that I had so much to learn about the LGBTQ community and the world in general. I realized that I was troubled by what I understood as my complacency with my ignorance, so I felt that I needed to find a way not only to help end ignorance in others, but also within myself. A couple of years later, in June of my junior year in high school, Alex, one of the assistant producers here at Outcasting, stopped by my school one day to talk about Outcasting. Walking into the meeting, I had thought that I was going to hear about a radio station like 102.7 or another average music radio station. After hearing Alex share what Outcasting does in giving youth a voice and sharing their views and knowledge of the LGBTQ community, I was blown away. It felt like the perfect opportunity for me to learn about myself and teach others while being an activist. I signed up to join in the summer of 2017, and ever since then, I've constantly been learning about the LGBTQ community. In every session, I learn about the community, not only through the research I do, but also by talking to my peers here at the studio. When we goof off and talk about our lives, I learn what it's like to be gay, bi, trans, or the range of identities I find at Outcasting. At first, I was a bit apprehensive about joining because I was scared that as a straight person, I might be trivializing other people's experiences. I soon found that this was ridiculous because although I'm not a member of the LGBTQ community, I'm supportive and truly open to learning about it, and that's what matters in being an activist. Anyway, although I don't understand everything, joining Outcasting has helped me be a bit less ignorant about the LGBTQ community and teach others as well.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 50 public radio stations around the country. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to the show. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
If you're gay, then you're gay. Don't pretend that you're straight. You could be who you are any day of the week. You are unlike the others, so strong and unique. We're all with you. If you're straight, well, that's great. You can help procreate and make gay little babies for the whole human race. Make a world we can live in where the one who you love's not an issue. And we're all here in it together.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Tanya Kane Perry, with thanks to Steve Fried, John DeBoer, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Quinn and Max from Outcasting Overtime, produced by Mark's Office, and from Janet Mason. Billy Porter, Monty Python, Bette Midler, and A Great Big World performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KEUL, Girdwood and Hope, Alaska, 3CR, Fitzroy, Victoria, WHYR, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, where our big birthday bash is coming soon, so stay tuned.